40 greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
The Major League Baseball playoffs now have six teams still in contention for the World Series trophy. In results Monday, the Houston Astros edged the host Boston Red Sox 5-4 to win that playoff series in four games and advance to their first American League Championship Series. The Astros last advanced to a league championship series in 2005, when they were in the National League. And speaking of the National League, the Los Angeles Dodgers defeated the host Arizona Diamondbacks Monday 3-1 to sweep that playoff series in three games and reach the National League Championship Series. The Dodgers await the winner of the playoff series between the Washington Nationals and the defending World Series champion Chicago Cubs. The Cubs beat the visiting Nationals Monday 2-1 and now lead that best-of-five playoff series 2-1. Game 4 is later Tuesday evening in Chicago, where it's must-win for the Nationals. And the Houston Astros await the winner of the Cleveland Indians-New York Yankees series. The Yankees beat the Indians Monday 7-3. To force a decisive Game 5 on Wednesday night in Cleveland. Joining us now for analysis and commentary is sports reporter Dan Friedel. Dan, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Sonny. It's good to be here again. It's definitely October baseball time, and it's really interesting to see how these games play out each night.
Dan, that last series I mentioned, Yankees-Indians, the Yankees, one of the world's most famous clubs. They have that nickname, the Bronx Bombers. But this version of the Yankees being called the Baby Bombers. Talk about that.
Well, the two big stars in the last couple of seasons on the Yankees have been this year's potentially the American League MVP and Rookie of the Year, Aaron Judge, who finished the regular season with over 50 home runs, mostly thanks to an incredible first half of the season. And then, if you remember, last year in the second part of the season, their young prospect catcher Gary Sanchez came up and hit a multitude of home runs as the season was wrapping up. Sanchez hit a home run last night to help the Yankees beat the Cleveland Indians and force that Game 5 that you mentioned. So in the past, when the Yankees have had this success, they've had these established players: Derek Jeter, Mariano Rivera, David Cohn, Paul O'Neill, guys like that, Bernie Williams. Those are these recent historic Yankees players who were on the team for 10 years and won all sorts of American League East championships, American League championships, and World Series championships. Now you have these guys who you don't really consider full-time Yankees players yet who are making an impact.
The Indians, of course, were runners-up to the Cubs in a thrilling World Series last season. They'll have home field advantage in Game 5, Dan. How big is that?
Well, I have to say that just watching some of the games in Yankee Stadium on the TV, you can see how much energy that crowd brings to the Yankees players. I was recently in the new Yankee Stadium for the first time for a New York City FC soccer game. They're a partner with Manchester City in the English Premier League, And that place is pretty small. I mean, it's a full-size stadium, but the walls are very close to the field. The fans are on top of the players. There's a lot of noise there. And if you're a visiting team and you get behind and it's a pressure situation and you've got 100-mile-an-hour fastballs coming your way from Luis Severino, you've got all that noise on top of it. It's a tough situation. So the home field for Game 5 should be really important for Cleveland. It's a strong, supportive stadium in Cleveland. The Indians players should be able to get back to their usual routine. They're back in Cleveland already. They have a day off until tomorrow's game. And Corey Kluber for the Indians will be on the mound for Game 5, and he's arguably been the best pitcher in the American League this year, even though he had a really tough time last Friday in Game 2 of the series, giving up a couple home runs and getting knocked out of the game early. So we'll see how he recovers from probably what's his worst outing of the season.
The winner of the Cleveland Indians New York Yankees series will play the Houston Astros. Dan, what can you tell our Voice of America listeners about these Astros?
Well, the Astros are one of these teams that successfully went from worst to first over a few years. I don't think that the Astros had any obfuscation about the idea that they were trying to get the highest draft picks they could for a couple of years in the Major League Baseball draft so that they could rebuild the franchise. As you mentioned, they were in the World Series only about 10 years ago, but since then, they changed leagues, and they also went way down in the win column, losing over 100 games a couple of years in a row, and now they're back. They have a great selection of young players. They've added some veteran players. Like, for example, Justin Verlander, who is synonymous with the Detroit Tigers, AL MVP, I believe, and Cy Young winner in one season with the Tigers, who threw a couple of no-hitters, got traded to Houston in the late part of the summer. He actually came in to pitch out of the bullpen yesterday while they were trying to knock off Boston. So it's a good mix of exciting young players, foreign players, you know, Jose Altuve, Yuli Gurriel from, you know, Jose Altuve from Venezuela, Yuli Gurriel, who's from Cuba, American players as well. It's an exciting team, and they'll actually put up a really good fight against the Yankees or the Indians, whichever team makes it through that series.
Dan, let's turn to the National League now. The Los Angeles Dodgers, they're through to the National League Championship Series. Dodgers, part of that ownership group, Magic Johnson, the basketball great. I think the Dodgers had the best record in the big leagues during the regular season. What do you think about the Dodgers?
Right, the Dodgers finished a couple games ahead of both Houston and Cleveland for the best record overall in baseball, which in a change from recent years means that if they make it to the World Series, they'll get to play 4 out of the 7 games if it goes that far in Los Angeles. The Dodgers had the best 50-game segment of the season in over 100 years when they went 43-7 from late July until early September when they kind of went into a slide. But the Dodgers look like they're back. Yu Darvish pitched well. Their best pitcher, Clayton Kershaw, who struggled in the playoffs, pitched well. And they just ran through the Arizona Diamondbacks, who were kind of an upstart team, 3-0 with not much trouble. They won 3-1 last night. A couple of young players like Cody Bellinger, who's kind of the counterpoint to Aaron Judge in the National League, Rookie of the Year for sure in the National League, hit a home run and made a great play over the railing to catch a ball that was basically halfway in the dugout. The Dodgers look strong. They seem to have righted the ship after their September swoon.
The Dodgers now await the winner of the Washington Nationals-Chicago Cubs series. Chicago Cubs have the inside track with that 2-1 advantage. Dan, how do you see that Cubs-Nationals series?
I mean, everybody talks about the Washington Nationals being one of the most potent offenses in the National League and all of baseball, but they have struggled to score runs now for their 4th playoff run in a row since the team came to Washington over a decade ago. 2012, 2014, 2016, 2017, they've had trouble scoring runs, as evidenced by a close game yesterday that was really just a bloop hit away from going in the Nationals' favor. The score was just 2-1, nine-inning game. A couple of hits made the difference, and the Nats have to score runs. I think a lot of people have criticized locally some of the moves by the Nationals manager, Dusty Baker, but when it comes down to it, you have to score more than a couple of runs per game to have a chance. And the Cubs have been there before. I mean, the people have said that the Cubs are not the team that they were last year when they won the World Series against Cleveland and they cruised through the regular season, and that's true. But they have a lot of players who got invaluable experience last year, not only beating Cleveland in the World Series, but getting there against San Francisco and Los Angeles to get to the World Series. So that's helpful. And the game later today will be a test for Washington. Tanner Roark, who one of the most reliable pitchers for the Nats in recent years, has struggled this year. He's going to take the mound against Jake Arrieta, who has had a tough season this year. He still has pretty good statistics, but you can't forget the season he had 2 years ago when he was the most dominating pitcher in the National League. So maybe he can bring back some of that in front of the home crowd in Chicago.
Dan, you mentioned that bloop single by Anthony Rizzo in the eighth inning. The ball dropped between Jason Wirth and Michael A. Taylor of the Nationals. I know we like to second guess after plays like that, but do you think Taylor or Wirth should have dove for that ball?
I was looking at that earlier, and I think the only player who really could have caught it was Taylor. If you go back and look at the replay, Trey Turner, who's arguably the fastest player in baseball, who's the shortstop, went back on the ball, and he went a little bit the wrong direction. Wirth, you have to say, has had a great career, but he's never going to be remembered as an outstanding outfielder. He's actually struggled more in left field than in his previous position of right field. Taylor seemed like the one who had the best beat on the ball, but he was playing deep because of Rizzo's power threat. So if anybody's going to catch the ball, it should have been Taylor, but I think if you go back and analyze the play, it probably would have been a tough play for 9 out of 10 center fielders in baseball.
Thanks, Dan. Sports reporter Dan Friedel. Dan, we hope to talk to you again about the Major League Baseball playoffs.
Look forward to chatting again soon, Sonny. Thanks.
Thanks, Dan. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
Keep on.
Joining us now with a package of sports news is reporter Samson Omale. Good evening,
Samson. Good evening to you, Sonny. We begin with the 2018 FIFA World Cup qualifying matches played across Africa this past weekend. Some football analysts have been weighing in on Nigeria's qualification for the 2018 FIFA World Cup in Russia and other results that came through from the matches played across various venues.
Super Eagles played a good brand of football on Saturday, but it was rather unfortunate the way the result ended, not what a lot of Nigerians expected. But we shouldn't take anything away from the Zambians. They played a delightful brand of football. I think the Zambians played better than Nigeria.
The Morocco and Ivory Coast group seems to be the most interesting of them all. Morocco defeated Gabon 3-0 to eliminate them. Ivory Coast shot themselves in the foot when they played the goalless draw against Mali the penultimate day. So it goes down to the wire in Abidjan, where Ivory Coast will play Morocco. Now Ivory Coast have 8 points. Morocco has got 9 points. So that's the most interesting group.
I think the talking points would definitely be the Uganda-Ghana game, because I know FIFA have set a bad precedence.
In cricket news, South Africa recorded one of the most comprehensive test victories in their history as they thrashed Bangladesh by an earnings 254 runs inside 3 days in Bloemfontein to seal a 2-0 series win. South Africa captain Faf du Plessis said he was happy that his team achieved their targets against Bangladesh, but acknowledges that tougher challenges lie ahead later in the summer against India and Australia. The Proteas beat Bangladesh by an earnings and 254 runs on Sunday in Bloemfontein to wrap up a 2-0 test series victory.
I think we had really good targets leading into this series of what we wanted to achieve as a team, not just as a batting unit. And we achieved those goals hands down. So the confidence from this series that we move into two big series at the end of the year, we appreciate that India and Australia are going to be a lot tougher. Bangladesh possibly didn't have the firepower that we thought they would have in these conditions. Yes, so confidence, and also we won't get too far ahead of ourselves in thinking that with the finished article, we'll still have a lot of work to do to try and be the team that we want to be.
In athletics news, Galen Robb became the first American to win the Chicago Marathon in 15 years and prevented Kenyan Eber Kirui from a back-to-back win. Robb, a two-time Olympian, finished the men's race with a time of 2 hours, 9 minutes and 20 seconds.
The important thing, I think, was just to be decisive. That was the big thing. That's what I tried to do, you know. It just kind of happened naturally, I guess. I saw that I had a little bit of a gap, and he wasn't right on me, you know, when I started to move. And at that point, I told myself, you got to go and really put the hurt on him and see how he responds. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to get a little bit of a gap. He's a tough runner. You know, I think that he's proven over and over again that he does really well in these types of races. And so I knew I was going to have a battle on my hands. And once I was able to get a gap at that point, there's no looking back. You got to go all the way to the finish and give it all you got. And so I was just trying to keep driving all the way there.
Tirunesh Dibaba of Ethiopia was a women's winner, finishing in 2 hours, 18 minutes, 30 seconds. Defending champion Florence Kiplagat could not match the high tempo setup by 5-time world champion on the track, Dibaba, who opened up the field just after 30 minutes of racing. Kenyan Birik Kosgei, who braved the high tempo throughout sticking to the Ethiopian, came in second in 1 minute, 53 seconds later. Africa and Nigeria table tennis star Aaron Akwadri has won the men's single event of the ITTF Challenge Polish Open. The Nigerian defeated Japan's Kai Yoshida in 6 sets to become the first African to win an ITTF title outside the continent. Akwadri is among the top 20 players in the world that will compete at the prestigious ITTF World Cup in Liège, Belgium from October 20th to the 22nd. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, Sonny, in Washington.
Thanks for that spicy sports package, Samson. Joining us once again on the Sunny Side of Sports is Andrew Palcheski, the Voice of America's social media reporter. Sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Good to be here with you.
Welcome back, Andrew. I understand a late, great NFL quarterback is trending.
Yes, getting sad news that Yelburton Abraham Tittle Jr., or as he's better known, Y.A. Tittle, the famed quarterback, has died at the age of 90. Known as one of the early greats of the game, played from 1948 to 1964 for 3 different teams. Fascinating stat that I saw on social media, Sonny. He's one of only 8 quarterbacks in the National Football League to throw 7 touchdown passes in 1 game, which is the most ever thrown by a quarterback. So that record is tied. There are 8 players who have done it, and he is one of them. So in good company in the record books there. Known for his grit and determination on the field, a really tough player, but known for some things off the field as well, or actually things that are on the field but kind of have grown into other sports or other areas of our culture. One of those was an iconic football photo, perhaps the most iconic football photo ever. It's Tittle on his knees on the field after losing a title game with blood trickling down his head from a hit, and he has a dazed look on his face. This really marked one of the first instances in sports photography of not just having action shots, but having these reaction shots as well. Especially when you look at, you know, we talk about the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat.
Right.
You look at those players who have lost a championship and come so close to winning, and you look at the emotion that they have. And this was certainly the case for Y.A. Tittle in this photo that's become so famous. Also known for another bit of trivia from the field that's worked its way into other sports. Known for creating the football play where a quarterback throws a ball high up into the air and a receiver jumps up down the field to catch it. Tittle called the play the alley-oop.
Alley-oop.
And that alley-oop term went on to go into basketball. It's a phrase I'm sure many of our listeners are familiar with when a passer throws the ball up near the hoop and somebody jams it in to the basket there. So that started with Y.A. Tittle in football, of all places. So that's a good trivia question. If any of our listeners go out and do bar trivia or anything, that's a good way to, you know, if they ask where alley-oop came from, now you know.
Andrew, I know you realize this is a hot time for World Cup qualifying in international soccer, and I know you have some trending news, but let me first give the official qualified teams for Russia 2018. So far, we have a little more than half the field filled. 17 teams have officially qualified for Russia 2018. A total of 32 will participate. I'll run them down according to region. From Africa, Egypt and Nigeria have booked their tickets to Russia. From Asia, Iran, Japan, South Korea, and Saudi Arabia all going to Russia. From Europe, Belgium, England, defending World Cup champion, Germany, Iceland, Poland, Russia, the host, Serbia, and Spain. From the North, Central America, and Caribbean region, Costa Rica and Mexico. And finally, from South America, Brazil. And I understand maybe a few more teams will be qualifying today, Andrew.
Yeah, we've got, as we talked about yesterday, Argentina looking in that do-or-die situation, hoping to qualify. And another team that's pretty close to home that we'll talk about in a minute. But I want to go to one of the teams that you mentioned on that list, one that stands out from all the others, and that is Iceland. Iceland clinching the World Cup berth for the first time ever in the country's history. They are actually, Sonny, the smallest country ever to qualify for the World Cup. They have about a population of about 330,000. And the only country to qualify with a population of less than 1 million people. So another little bit of trivia there. It's a lot of trivia we got on the show today. But Iceland, of course, was the darling of the Euro Cup in 2016. They beat England and made it to the quarterfinals. There was a lot of attention on this team from this very small country. And I have no doubt there's going to be a lot of attention when they go to Russia in 2018. Just as we talked about with Egypt yesterday, we saw people celebrating in bars across Iceland and those videos going up on social media. Although there are fewer places to celebrate in Iceland, and there are fewer fans celebrating because it is a smaller country, but it is something that has really captured not just attention in that very small nation, but around the world. And I have an inkling that Iceland is going to have a lot of fans come 2018 in Russia. I think we're going to see a lot of people rooting for this tiny underdog out of the European region.
I always feel cooler when you say Iceland. Always.
A breath of fresh air, exactly.
What other World Cup news is trending, Andrew?
Well, one team, as I mentioned, that's close to home that you did not mention on that list is the United States of America. The U.S. men's national team is looking to try to wrap things up today against Trinidad and Tobago. However, as if it wasn't enough of an issue to try to qualify for the World Cup, they've had some new challenges to face down in Trinidad and Tobago, specifically water. Because Trinidad and Tobago chose to move the match from their national stadium, where there were reported electrical problems, to Ato Boldon Stadium about an hour south. Well, it looks like nobody checked Ato Boldon Stadium before they moved the match there, because when the U.S. men's national team arrived yesterday, Sonny, they found that the track surrounding the field was covered in water.
So we
saw a video go up on Twitter and Facebook showing members of the U.S. men's national team being carried over this water hazard by members of the U.S. soccer staff. And they posted a fun little message on Twitter with the hashtags Road to Russia and hashtag River to Russia. Having a little bit of fun of that. You know, amid the jokes, though, there were some concerns about whether this could actually impede play for the U.S. men's national team. Here's what head coach Bruce Arena had to say about that.
A little heavy and mushy. It has to be expected with all that rain. It definitely changes the way the game's going to look. It's going to be a slow game, probably a little bit sloppy. Impact. You're footing, you're passing, you're running.
because it's not just the field, not just the track that's the problem being wet, it's the field as well, as Bruce Arena talked about there. He thinks his team can handle it. It's going to be a different conditions for them, but ones they hope they can succeed at. And if they win, they've all but booked their spot into the World Cup. So all eyes on Trinidad and Tobago tonight to see if the U.S. can do it.
Andrew Palcheski, the VOA social media reporter. Thank you, Andrew.
Thanks, Sonny.
And that wraps up the October 10th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer John Dryden. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States will continue its long tradition of welcoming and caring for refugees. During fiscal year 2018, the U.S. government has proposed admitting up to 45,000 refugees from Africa, 19,000, East Asia, 5,000, Europe and Central Asia, 2,000, Latin America and Caribbean, 1,500, Near East and South Asia, 17,500. The new limit of 45,000 refugees is lower than in recent years. It takes into account a number of factors: the security of the American people, the government's capacity to properly vet the refugees according to its enhanced security procedures, and the backlog of hundreds of thousands of asylum cases the Department of Homeland Security currently faces from people who have already come into the United States and are seeking protection. Since 1975, the U.S. has welcomed more than 3 million refugees. With the new ceiling limit, the United States will continue to permanently resettle more refugees than any other country and will keep offering protection to the most vulnerable of those who have been persecuted because of race, ethnicity, political opinion, nationality, religion, or membership in a particular social group. It is also important to note that refugee resettlement is only one part of the U.S.'s response to the global crisis of forced displacement. The U.S. remains the world's leading donor of humanitarian assistance, providing over $7 billion last year. During the 2017 fiscal year, the U.S. provided more than $1.4 billion in humanitarian assistance for the Syria crisis and more than $581 million for Iraq. In addition, the U.S. has given nearly $2.5 billion for people from countries facing famine and nearly $104 million for displaced persons in Burma and the region. We are also the number one contributor to the Office of the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees and continue to be the leading donor to other agencies to provide life-saving support for refugees and conflict victims, including the Red Cross, MOVEMENT, the World Food Program, UNICEF, and a wide range of non-governmental humanitarian organizations. This support provides vital assistance to refugees and conflict victims close to their home countries, with the view to enabling refugees to return to their homes voluntarily and in safety when conditions permit. The United States takes pride in its humanitarian efforts and goals and will continue to care for people around the world who are fleeing violence and persecution.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, I'm Linor Moudou. Please join me live every Tuesday at 17:30 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions. Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, a look at the Grace Hopper celebration. The conference is the world's largest gathering of women in technology. We'll recap the events in Orlando, Florida, and speak with African women working in the industry in Washington, D.C. and elsewhere for their perspective on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa. VOA.
We are always glad to have our listeners throughout Africa tuning in to our newscast covering Africa news. Tune in on the top of each hour 24/7. VOA is your trusted source of news and information.